T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at about 5:45, talking a little bit certainly about Tulane and their pro day. Matty Hudak will join us here, the Green Wave football sideline reporter and also host of Before the Whistle at 5:20. We'll have on with us Mo Budd from Thibodeau, Scotty Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher. And Scott will talk about the LSU Tigers and going up against a pitching staff, number one ranked. Everybody says they're the best three in the country from a pitching standpoint, starting wise. And so we'll get Scotty's assessment of the Razorbacks and their pitching staff. We had a text, 8181, I think is, I don't have my glasses on, but Mike, how do they differentiate between the pro day and the combine? It's basically the same drills, same stuff they're doing. Some people decide not to do some drills or all of the drills and wait until the pro day. Basically, you're doing it on your own home turf, so to speak. So that's really no difference from a drill standpoint in what you're doing. And then you got all the meetings. I saw Jaden Daniels talking about, I think he's meeting with 5 or 6 teams afterwards, I think maybe he did some yesterday and last night, and then he's doing some later today after the workout. So you're going to have a lot of the same sort of things that happen at the combine happen on your individual pro day. What they look for, because I've been around long enough, they want to see how you interact with your teammates, because your regional scout who has scouted that guy and given that profile to your director of college scouting, and now the general manager, head coach has it, they want to see if it matches. A lot of times, I say a lot, sometimes there are guys that don't interact well with others. And so for pro day, they sort of fake the funk, if you catch where I'm going. They're sort of faking this of how well they get along with teammates. You want to make sure that jives correctly of how they interacted with their teammates, with coaches now coaching them on some of these drills, and how they responded when they were in games, and what your regional scout says. So it's part of the process that now they all go through. It's sort of a beauty contest type of deal. Again, they know if you can play or you can't. Now they want to find out about the individual, kind of what makes you tick. And do you love football? How much do you love football? And so when you're putting that kind of money out, when you draft a player, and it might be long-term, the long-term investment, and sometimes it's a short-term. You want to find out exactly every little piece of information you can on that player. So that's a big part of NFL pro days, but really doesn't tell you if he can play or not. You want to find out about the person. We come back, Scotty Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, will join us to talk LSU baseball right after this break on the Big 870 WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio at 535, 540. We'll have it on with us, Matty Hudak, who covers Tulane Green Wave and hosts the Before the Whistle podcast. And we'll be talking about what happened yesterday at the Green Wave Pro Day update on those players that worked out for the NFL scouts on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line. Former Major League Baseball pitcher Scott Sanders. Scott, thanks so much for joining us. Wish you a happy birthday a couple days ago, but happy birthday again, bud.
That's right. Thank you, my brother. Thank you. Thank y'all for having me.
Scott, man, if they thought last week was rough from a pitching standpoint, I told this to Charlie, this happened right before the season cranked up. Man, I'm passing by a newsstand, and they got this Baseball Digest, this huge book, Baseball Digest, on the cover, the three pitchers for Arkansas on it, number one ranked. And have they lived up to expectations?
Yeah, man, wow. I mean, especially Hagen Smith. I mean, the guy's got 29 innings pitches, 62 punch outs. You know, that one day punched out 17 out of 18 outs. And, you know, the next two guys are doing the same. You know, I mean, the three starters, the highest ERA they got between them is a 2.57. So it's pretty crazy, you know. But I did get a little info. I don't think I'm not sure who LSU is going to start on tomorrow and Thursday, but I did see that Holman is going to go on Friday and Jump's going to stay on Saturday, you know, with Hagen Smith going Thursday. And then they're going to flip Molina to Friday and the other kid pitching on Saturday. So that would be interesting, but I think it's smart. You know, obviously the way Hagen Smith's pitching right now, you would like to put your ace up against him, but on short rest, I think it's best to say, hey, listen, let's try to win two out of three. Let's try to win, you know, Friday and Saturday, which LSU doesn't do that very often. But with this pitching staff, it's probably a good idea that what Jay's doing.
Scott, before I get into some questions about, you know, the weekend rotation, how things are lining up, I want to get your deep dive into Hagen Smith because, you know, he came into the season with super high expectations. His first game of the year, he kind of got lit up. Like, I don't want to say he got shelled. He gave up three runs in one inning against James Madison. But since then, he has been – like, Jay's already called him the best pitcher in college baseball, and that's not an exaggeration. The numbers just speak for themselves. In five starts since that opening games, he's 4-0, 28 innings pitched, one earned run, 10 hits, and as you mentioned, 60 strikeouts. Once again, 60 strikeouts and 28 innings pitched, only eight walks. And he's got a .32 ERA in that stretch. So what are your thoughts on Hagen Smith? He's just been unbelievable this season, and he's going to be that game one starter on Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, it's – you know, sometimes when guys have that hype on them, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to do. But he came in to see, you know, he really finished strong last year, which kind of hyped him up for this year. And obviously, like you said, first game out, one inning, I think it was three runs, three earned runs, couple strikeouts, a couple walks, whatever. And since then, it's like totally different guy. Like all of a sudden, he's found himself. And obviously, you know, he's going out there and he's not just competing; he's dominating opponents, and he's dominating some good opponents. You know, the 17 strikers were against Oregon State, which Oregon State is a legit contender every year to make regionals, you know, but he's lived up to the billing. Obviously, you know, catching him on a Thursday is probably the best thing for LSU. You're going to get him a day early, which it shouldn't really matter because he still had plenty of rest, but you know, it does change up his routine. So if there is one thing that I think LSU has in their favor is like all of a sudden now, he's got to prepare his body on Thursday. He's got to do all his mental stuff on Thursday. So they may have a little upper hand. Hopefully they can put up two or three earned runs on him, you know, and find a way to maybe sneak out a win and beat the hottest pitcher in college baseball.
Scott, we've seen LSU from a hitting standpoint really inconsistent. What can you put your finger on here? Okay, in that we've seen last year, I think we were talking about it was the flip side. We weren't sure. You knew about one guy. You know, you knew about Paul, and that was it. The rest of the guys, it was uncertain what you were going to get from a pitching standpoint. The pitching, to me, overall, as a group, has improved from a year ago. But the hitting has been wildly inconsistent on this team. And what do you look at that from a standpoint of kind of why?
Well, the main thing I look at is they're struggling really bad to find a leadoff hitter. They've tried Kling, they've tried Milam, they've tried so many guys. Right? They last night they put big Fry in the leadoff spot against Southeastern. So it's to me last year with Dylan Cruz, the dude was on base 600% of the time, right?
Yeah.
So anytime you have somebody on base 600% of the time, it just makes the rest of your lineup so much easier to succeed, because when a pitcher is in the stretch, obviously he has more stress on him. He has more, you know, more things can happen where he's not just in the windup, where he's just rocking and firing. And they just haven't had that guy to start the game off, you know, in the leadoff spot that they can get the ball rolling. And obviously I think, you know, Kling didn't play against Southeastern. I don't know if he's even going to play this weekend. You know, he hasn't got a hit yet in SEC play. So you look at those type of things, they need something at the top to get rolling. Cause you know, Tommy Tanks has turned back into Tommy Tanks. He's hitting the ball all over the field. He's got, you know, he's rocking and rolling. Travinsky's, you know, leading the team, you know, and hitting .333, striking out a little bit too much probably, but his on base is still, you know, over .482. So they have the guys that can drive guys in, but they just don't have – they haven't had that consistent guy at the top of the lineup that they can pencil in, you know. And that's when Jay is still tinkering. You know, they're 26 games into the season. He's still tinkering with his lineup. No coach – with a team like an SEC powerhouse like LSU wants to tinker with their lineup 26 games in. By now he would want his lineup. I'm batting this guy one against righties. I'm batting this guy, you know, first against lefties, and everything just falls in place. You know, if a righty's pitching, this is my lineup. If a lefty's pitching, this is my lineup. And Jay doesn't have that right now, and I know it's probably driving him nuts because he's given a ton of guys opportunities. Like, here's your chance. Take the opportunity. Take this job. And nobody's taking the bulls by the horn and says, I want to be the leadoff guy. You know, I want to be the everyday right fielder. I want to be the everyday center fielder. It's just bits and pieces. And when you do that, the camaraderie of your lineup is never the same, because if you hit three hole one day, and you hit seven hole the next day, it's two different – you get pitched two different ways in those two spots. So it's just about finding that consistency, but I think it all starts with that leadoff, man. If they can find a leadoff guy and almost just have to say, you know what, this is my guy, I'm sticking with him, and see what happens, and maybe they can get a little more consistent lineup.
That's a really good point, Scott, and I wanted to kind of hone in a little bit on it. It's because I was listening to the broadcast last night, and the guys made a point. The highest OPS batters on this team, you mentioned Dylan Cruz got on base all the time, are guys like Hayden Travinsky and Jared Jones, and that's because they hit for such pop. They're not like the prototypical leadoff hitter. Now, Mac Bingham is a guy that's been in the spot a couple times this season, and he's starting to heat up. He goes 3-for-3 last night against Southeastern, and now he's hitting .400 over the last week or so. Does Bingham kind of fit that role, I think, a little bit better as a leadoff position? I think that's a huge spot for them to kind of figure out, and maybe Mac Bingham could be the guy.
I definitely think Bingham is probably, if it was myself, I mean, I love Milam. I think he gives you a lot of quality at bats, and he's a leadoff, right? But he's a freshman. So sometimes the stage can get too big. I'm not saying it does, but it can, right? You know, for the first time when you go to Mississippi State and there's 13,000 people in the stands, that kid's never played in front of 13,000 people. You can play in front of 13,000 at home. That's totally different from playing in front of 13,000 on the road, right? But I would love to see Milam go in there and just throw him in there and say, go get it, and then hit Bingham in the two-hole. But if not, you can always flip those two guys, right? Who's a little bit hotter? But those are the two guys that I see, the only two that really make sense to me. The third one that I would possibly put in that spot is Pearson, you know, because he's having a good year. He put some quality of bats together. He can run a little bit. But I do know Jay likes to put him down a little bit further down the lineup, like fifth or sixth, and kind of be that silent assassin, because he does have the pop, you know, to drive the ball out the yard with two, three guys on base. But I think probably Bingham is probably one of the most skilled collegiate guys that they have, you know, that can probably fill that role and be the most consistent. So I agree with you there. With Bingham's probably the guy.
Scott, we saw him this weekend, this past weekend, a unique player in Jack Caglione. What he can do, and okay, we see Ohtani does it in the major leagues, but that can pitch, and also so he's a regular day guy too. You've played for a long time in the majors. Your thoughts on him and how he can project at the major league level, because that's a unique skill set that he's got, and he ain't no little dude now. I mean, he's a big cat. So your thoughts on Jack and looking at him, if you're looking to draft someone, to me, it would be hard for me to pass that guy up. And I know pitching is paramount all across the board in the majors. But what Jack can do as both a pitcher, hitter, everyday guy, that is a unique – you're watching something special here with him at the University of Florida.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. He's a unit. That dude is a unit. I mean, he's a big boy. And the thing about him, I would have a hard time passing him up too, because the bottom line with him is you have two options for him to make it to the big leagues, right? So if his bat lags, he can probably make it as a pitcher. If his pitching lags, he can probably make it as a hitter. He's got power. He plays a good first base. He plays a solid first base, you know, defensive first base. The guy throws 96, a touch 98. He has a really good changeup. So I don't know if he'll ever be a starting pitcher in like a major league type of setting, but I can definitely see him being some type of, you know, reliever, which would kind of mess him up if he's more of a DH or first baseman type of thing, you know. But he is definitely a unit, and I'll be honest, Florida has such an advantage. He pitches on Sundays, you know, because he's a Friday night starter on almost any SEC team, besides maybe Arkansas, right?
Yeah, right.
But every other team, he's a Friday starter, but they don't pitch him on Friday because obviously he goes on and throws 100 pitches. That's going to make his bat lag on Saturday and Sunday because he's going to be tired, right? You throw 120 pitches, you're going to be tired. So they're very smart about it. He pitches on Sunday. He gets the rest on Monday. He DHs on Tuesday. And then he plays Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the field again. So, but he's definitely intriguing. And I think he's going to be a lot of people's radar because I don't know if he's Ohtani. But I tell you what, he's as good as an American two-way player as we've seen in a long time. You know, last guy I remember was a guy from Louisville. I'm drawing a blank. McHale, I think was his name. He kind of did it years ago, and the Rays drafted him, let him do both. But he was not more. He wasn't as athletic as Jack.
No,
is. He was heavy bottom. You know, heavy leg. But he could hit and he could pitch, but he couldn't really play a true position. Jack can play a true first base and or DH. And or he can start, he can relieve, he can do a lot of things, and he's left-handed at everything. Pitch left, bats left. So, I mean, he's got the world right where he wants it, the palm of his hand, and he just has to keep doing what he's doing. He's going to make a lot of money.
So, Scott, back to Arkansas, 5-1 start in SEC play. There's a reason they're the number one team in the country, and that reason is the pitching staff. I mean, they're number one in the SEC in ERA with 2.5. And we talked about Hagen Smith, but it's not just him that's recording all these strikeouts. They, as a staff, have 296 strikeouts and 201 innings pitched. But the thing that's kind of stood out to me a little bit is their offense isn't elite. Like, they don't match the level of that pitching staff, which is hard to do in the first place. But they're number 13 in the SEC, hitting .279 on the season. One thing that stood out to me in that series against Auburn, the game that they won 6-5, I think it was game two, Ryder Helfrich hit a ball that's still in orbit right now. That thing is still like out in outer space. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on the Razorbacks lineup? You know, what do you think about them? I think they've been semi-mediocre. They haven't really matched the level of the pitching staff so far.
No, I don't see how they could.
Yeah, it's hard to.
That would be really difficult.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they are, I would call them more of a gritty team.
Yeah.
You know, to me, you know, they're not bangers. You got 33 home runs on the season, right, in 23 games. Is that bad? No. Nah. Is that good? No, not really. You know, but they have I think they're a type of team that they feed off their pitching staff, right? They know Hagen Smith goes out. If we get two runs, we're probably going to win. The other two guys go out. If we get four runs, we're probably going to win. So I think they're more of a team that, like, they don't want to beat themselves. They're going to make you beat them defensively, offensively. They're going to grind out at bats. They're going to, you know, they're going to do things to try to lengthen that game to get to LSU's bullpen, right? Because I'll be honest, a lot of people don't talk about Arkansas's bullpen. They have a solid bullpen with a lot of guys with sub-3 ERAs, right? And so they're going to be a team that you're going to have to go out and beat. You know, they remind me a lot of last year's LSU team, right? They're gonna they find a way. If they have to beat you pitching, they beat you pitching. If for some reason pitching fails, they're gonna grind out of bats and try to score 6-8 runs. You know, that's what they did. 6-5. They went here. They went some, you know, 2-1. It's all over the board, but they have a solid offense, but it gets overshadowed by the pitching staff so much that nobody's even talking about it.
And then looking at the weekend rotation, as you mentioned, Hagan Smith going on Thursday, LSU is kind of TBA. I mean, who do you expect to be the starting pitcher for the Tigers on Thursday, first and foremost, before I get into the Game 2 and Game 3 matchups?
My gut feel is I think they'll start Thatcher Hurd on early rest and maybe give him 75 pitches, right? Because if you look at Thatcher Hurd's demo, for 75 pitches, he's pretty darn good. It seems like when he gets to that 75, 85 pitch limit, he falls off and he gives up a four spot. So that's my gut feel. I don't really know what Jay's thinking. If I was Jay, I would start him because sometimes early rest is good for guys like Thatcher Hurd, right? Because that's two less days that he gets to think about. I just went out and I was so close to having a really good outing and I gave up four runs in the fifth inning, right? Sometimes long rest is not good when you're not on top of your game because short rest is like, okay, that outing is over with Sunday. Now let me go out here. Now I got Thursday. Let me go out there. I'm going to give you my best 3, 4, 5 innings I got. Take me out, and then it's a bullpen game.
And then moving on to Game 2 and Game 3, my last one for you here, Scott. The Luke Holman versus Mason Molina matchup I think is really interesting. As you mentioned, they moved Mason from a Sunday start to that Friday start, which is, you know, a little bit weird. The Game 2 start for him. He was a Texas Tech ace last year. He transferred into the program. He's been awesome for him. 3-0 record, 2.57 ERA. But the Tigers have a pitching advantage with Holman. He bounced back from that poor showing against Mississippi State and really had a lights-out performance against Florida in the Friday start this past weekend. And this is a guy that's been there, done that. We've talked to a couple different people about LSU baseball. And with Luke Holman, he was the ace of, you know, Alabama last year. He's played in SEC environments. You're not really worried about him there. And then the Game 3 starter as well, Gage Jump versus Brady Tigard, who was the Saturday starter for, you know, Arkansas. So they have him on normal rest. I think that's also a really good pitching matchup as well.
Yeah, I do. And I think Molina, I think the reason, kind of like I just mentioned earlier about, I'm going to blank, Thatcher Hurd coming back early. Molina, if you look at his box scores, he's been going 4, 4.5 innings, 3.5 innings, 5 innings. He's not a guy that's been stretching out to 7 innings, you know. So I think they're looking at, we could Hagan Smith go out there, throw 7-8 innings on Thursday, use our closer, bring back Molina on Friday on short rest. He's going to probably only go 4 innings, 5 innings tops anyway. Get him out. Then Saturday, really Friday is going to be the bullpen day for Arkansas. And then they're going to come back with Tigard on Saturday, you know, hopefully get 6, 7 innings out of him, go right back to their guys in the back end of the bullpen. So I think both coaches are really looking at this strategically, you know, with the Easter weekend, Easter Sunday, obviously SEC doesn't play on it. So I think they're really looking at, what's my best shot to win 2 out of 3, right? Both teams want to sweep. Obviously, both teams want to sweep. But I think both teams know if I can get 2 out of 3 games in this series, that's just as good as a sweep against most SEC teams.
Scotty, it's much listen to, much watch series.
It's going to be a fun one,
It's going to be really good as we approach Easter. If I don't get to see you before, happy Easter, buddy, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Peace, everybody, and thanks for having me, brother. Talk to you guys soon.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Scotty Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, Thibodeau native, went to Nichols State, got to pitch double-digit seasons in the Major Leagues, and got a son now in AAA ball with the Chicago Cubs. We'll be back with more sports talk, and Matty Hudak, who is the sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave, also hosts a Before the Whistle podcast, and she'll be giving us updates on the Tulane Green Wave Pro Day, which happened yesterday. A lot of folks there. You got a quarterback. They there to watch it. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, want to tell everybody WWL is your home for LSU baseball, and it starts tomorrow afternoon at 5:30 in the box. LSU plays number one ranked Arkansas. And pregame starts at 5:30 right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. First pitch at 6 p.m. And then Friday, I think it's pregame at 6:30 and the game starts at 7. And Saturday's matchup, 1:30 pregame, 2 p.m., and you can hear it all right here on the Big 870 WWL and free on the Odyssey app. On our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, host of Before the Whistle podcast. Also, she's the football sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave, Maddie Hudak. Maddie, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Finally caught up from the early day yesterday.
I got it. I knew you were busy yesterday. Maddie, you and I have had this conversation. When you got a really good quarterback that can play in the NFL, you're going to have a lot of peeping eyes there. So they had a lot of people there at the Green Wave Pro Day. And, okay, that it's really more of a beauty contest. You sort of know what Michael Pratt can do and maybe some of the weaknesses that he has. But he really threw the football well. That's not a surprise to me. And I think that once you get past, you're going to have to figure out exactly where Penix and Bo Nix go. And I still think somehow, some way, they're going to squeeze into round one. Then it becomes the intrigue on where Pratt will fall. I think Spencer Rattler will go ahead of him, but I don't think it'll be too much farther for him. And I think you're looking at late second into round three for Michael Pratt. But you were there, how well he threw the football. And I think the most important thing, his interaction with people, because I think that you know if that guy can play or not. It's how well he interacted with his teammates and also the coaches and people from the NFL that were there.
Yeah, that's what always sticks out to me about Michael Pratt. And really going to the Senior Bowl, you can see really why these quarterbacks want to throw at their pro day and throw with the guys that they're used to throwing to, because it is a little ugly for a little bit of the time down in Mobile. But for me, it's always been, how are the quarterbacks really interacting as leaders? Because presumably, you know, they're going to get drafted. Even if they're a backup on a team, everyone still looks to the quarterback for guidance. And then you have to be able to command a room of strangers who are likely going to be a lot older than you are, being that drafted quarterback. So to see him be able to do it with strangers, but then really to just see how much he really is a great teammate. You know, he only participated in the throwing sessions. He didn't opt to do any of the testing that day, but that really wasn't until an hour and a half into Pro Day, and he was there from the beginning, really just encouraging all of the guys on the bench press. He's just always so active and encouraging with them, and that to me is really where you see those intangibles stick out. But you also got a chance to see him throwing to guys like Lawrence Keys, Jaquan Jackson again, but actually being able to do so while all three of them were healthy, including a few other receivers that really helped out that day. But I just thought you really got a chance to see what that trio can all really do when under full health.
Maddie, one of the things, I get some phone calls from friends of mine who are in the scouting department, is about the defensive backs, the two cornerbacks, Jerish Monroe, who I remember when he was at East St. John and he started at Nichols State and he transfers to Tulane. And then Lance Robinson, who he's a De La Salle guy, and he goes to Kansas State and transfers to Tulane. A little bit about their workouts. I think both those guys have an opportunity to get picked late, or if not, priority free agents. I've got Monroe ranked a little bit higher than Lance, but I think both these guys have an opportunity to play at the next level with teams looking for cover corners so bad, because you just can't have three of them. You got to have four or five the way the league is, and spread the receivers out. Your thoughts on Monroe and also with Lance?
Yeah, so I thought they both performed really well during Pro Day. Since it was originally supposed to be at Yeoman Stadium, we would have probably had the ability to get those times a little more, whereas, you know, the scouts all just kind of confer in the middle and then they decide what the 40 times were. So we were all kind of going off of eye checks and really attempting on our end, but they all performed just really well in all aspects of it, looking at their verticals and their broad jumps as well. Again, not having necessarily the exact numbers there, but all of them kind of being this good surprise. I spent a lot of time standing on the sideline with Rob Green, who was one of our safeties coaches from last season, and so he was really, you know, locked in on his guys. I'd also point out Cam Pettislow was someone to me that looked to be a little stronger than we were used to seeing him and perform well in the testing as well. And I just think the versatility of all those guys sticks out. You think about Jarius Monroe coming in halfway during the season for Jaden Kennedy in the Cotton Bowl year for Tulane. And then, you know, talking with Lance Robinson, they had to really change the way all of them played in their coverage, because Jaden Kennedy and Lance Robinson were very similar, but with those different body types, it just really dictated a completely different way that they played defense. And looking at their ball skills from last year, I mean, the two of them total 7 interceptions and 17 pass breakups. And just whenever they were targeted in coverage in critical moments, that to me is really where they both stuck out, was their interceptions and pass breakups on third and fourth down when the game was really on the line. That's where you saw those guys really shine.
One of the things with Jerry is you can't teach size and his ability to kind of man cover. And with Lance, he can run. I mean, he can flat out run. Because I remember in high school, he was part of the state championship team in the football 100-meter relay. So one thing is, if you're part of that, I know you can run. And I think he's gotten much better as a technical corner with his footwork and his ability to sort of mirror a receiver and get his head turned around quicker.
Without question, he's been someone that's been such a pleasure to really watch grow into his own since the 2021 year, where he was hurt a little bit. He kind of played in and out and then had to really grow up as that starter in the Cotton Bowl year and then became really that veteran guy when Jarius Monroe had to come in. And just watching how his ball skills have really come along this year. But I always think back to that Kansas State game, which I know was special for him. You know that he's actually played under Bill Snyder, that defense, and gone up against a really good competition level here too in those 7-on-7s and the receivers that we see come out of Louisiana. But his open field tackle against Adrian Martinez on fourth down, where he just came from the complete opposite side of the field. He read it perfectly. You hear this term play speed, and we all know Lance can run fast, but not only can he run fast, he can diagnose a play, and then he's just there. And he's really good as a run tackler. When you talk about that technique, he's not that big of a guy, but he is such a functional strength tackler and was really just willing to go for it. And that, to me, makes up for a lot of his height as well as his ability to get high and make those interceptions.
The other thing, too, is get your head turned around. I don't know some of the techniques they teach them today with this mirror stuff. And then almost like they don't get their head turned around quick enough. You saw the improvement with Jarius and also Lance in that ability. And I think that's crucial. Okay, you can cover, but if you don't get your head turned around, the receiver can make the catch over you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think back to Jarius Monroe's interception in the Cotton Bowl, and you know that was a route that he had gotten burned on before. But they're just really good at reading the quarterback's eyes and just knowing, like you said, when to turn around at that point. Otherwise, that ball was going straight over his head. But there was just all the picks that Lance had. It was very surprising just to watch in a split second how quickly he was able to turn around. And when you talk with these guys, it's just a film study that they really, really work on. And just as much as they talk about the coaches, the guys like J.J. McCleskey and Rob Green and those guys that have really been there working on their techniques, but to just watch those two really come into their own, both as leaders on the defense when you lost a lot of that from Nick Anderson, Dorian Williams, and then moving on, those were two guys that I saw both really step up on and off the field.
Talking about speed, Jaquan Jackson, I saw him in high school at Hornville, and I mean, he's got a lot of it. He reminds me a lot of Darnell Mooney, really does. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two of them, a little bit different kind of style, but there is almost kind of, if you place it side by side, a lot of the same type player. Was there brought up any conversation about him and the return game? Because now with the new kickoff rule, I think that that's an area where Jaquan might be able to hit it. And he's got the speed. He can blow the top off of coverage. Was there any talk about the return game for him? Because I think that may really get a foot in the door. And because he's going to be a backup receiver to come in, but he gives you that big play element once you go to 3-4 wide receiver sets. He can make a quick impact as a kickoff man.
Oh, without question, you just think back to that homecoming game where he's something like he tied the longest return for a touchdown on one of those returns. But then looking back at his Cotton Bowl touchdown as well, it was something like 87 yards. And, that was pretty much 83 yards after catch. Just like you said, his ability downfield, it was actually fascinating that rule as we were kind of in the facility got promulgated down. And we were all just kind of talking about how, on the other hand, that kind of hurts a lot of guys that might want to get onto a team to be one of those special teams guys that just flies down the field as a gunner. But for someone like Jaquan, like you said, these new rules definitely can favor him. And you saw them working him as a returner at the Senior Bowl as well. And that's always been something that Willie Fritz and I believe this new coaching staff will just continue to emphasize, just the ability to get onto a roster. And just talking with Jaquan right before the Senior Bowl, just really watching him grow up, it really feels like he's grown a year since the season ended, but just really has that cerebral understanding that even though, if it's special teams, that's a great way to get onto a roster. And I've just seen him go from 0 to 100 in front of my face in seconds. And to watch him really run those deep routes yesterday, like you said, even though it's still a little bit of an exhibitionary thing, it was just really nice to see that those guys actually, you know, Pratt can actually throw the ball that far, and Jaquan Jackson can easily get there and get his head turned around in time.
Matty, you and I have talked about this. I think one guy, I don't know if he gets selected or not, but I would think he's got a pretty good chance to make an NFL roster. That's the center in Haynesworth. Okay, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he is so technically he's a great technician, I guess is the best term for it. And he does a fantastic job of controlling everything up front. That I don't know if he's the he's certainly not the prototype size for the center, but I like him as a player. He can play at the NFL level.
Listen, he has all the intangibles, yes. And you just think about the fact that, you know, Michael Pratt comes in halfway through the season as a starter. They're immediately able to get chemistry all the times Kai Horton has come in, and that's just been able to be seamless. And he had never missed a game since he became the starter in 2020 at Tulane. And you know, for all the talk about his size and that lack, he's gone against pretty big linemen, and to have the durability to have never missed a game, but just his leadership, particularly, again, this last season when there was a stretch that Michael Pratt wasn't there and they really needed these guys to just step up. Sincere Haynesworth was there, but you know, the whole play goes dead if the center and the quarterback can't get on the same page, and there's just never been a day where you even had to wonder that with Sincere and Michael Pratt or Kai Horton and the backups for that matter.
Matty, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it. We'll get you back soon to talk about the new regime and everything sort of sorting out together with the Green Way. Man, they find a quarterback. You might have something there. Might have something. Thanks so much, Matty. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
All righty. Matty Hudak, Tulane football sideline reporter, also hosts of Before the Whistle podcast. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Scott Sanders, Matty Hudak for joining us here. And at 6 o'clock, Steve Geller will join us. We'll have Scott Shanley, former Saints football player, part of that Super Bowl team, and now he does Saints pregame and postgame. And Gary Sarnoff, who wrote a book, Team of Destiny, right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.